Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Carolyn Hauser Carson, and she is author of Blossom, Your Seven-Step Journey to Healing Childhood Sexual Abuse and Creating Your Dream Life. Carolyn Hauser Carson is German-trained neuropathic doctor, humanistic psychotherapist, and family constellations facilitator. She is the author of, again, as I mentioned, Blossom, Seven Steps to Sexual Healing, and the upcoming book, The Pleasure IQ. She's an internationally recognized speaker and teacher on the subjects of spirituality, healing, and women's empowerment for almost two decades. Carolyn combines her knowledge to help women and brave men to have abundant, love-filled lives that flow with a sense of ease. Her work is based on the intersection of where the human body and experience meets past and even ancestral trauma, and shows how each individual's authentic true self is the source of one's own good, a place of unlimited abundance, creativity, courage, and joyful existence. Carolyn currently lives with her divine partner and soulmate Paul and her two beautiful children in Santa Barbara, where she teaches, speaks, and travels to host healing retreats all over the world. For more information, you can visit her website, which is womeninthflow.com, and I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. Please bear with me one moment. Let me go ahead and get Carolyn on here. Sorry, folks, my switchboard decided to hiccup. So, just one moment, please. There we go. Okay, Carolyn, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. And now the topic of healing sexual abuse, childhood sexual abuse, I mean, that is a topic that is one that is underspoken. I mean, it's one of those where, you know, so many people experience it. What are the statistics on the occurrence of childhood sexual abuse?
There's numbers as high as 1 in 3 and in women, and I think 1 in 6 in boys or young men. And, you know, that's for our country, and I'm thinking that in other countries where there isn't even, you know, as good of an infrastructure and oversight, the numbers could even be higher, right? That's what's documented in the States.
Yeah, that's just a staggering amount of people when you sit down and think about it that have experienced that. So what inspired you to write this book in bring your experience to the forefront?
That's a good question. I did not wake up, or I didn't grow up thinking, oh, you know what I want to do when I'm grown up, when I've grown up, is I want to help people heal from sexual trauma. No, I did have a pretty hard time in my teenage years. I was suffering from eating disorders from when I was 10 till 20. So for 10 years, I was suffering from eating disorders and trying to find a way to heal and couldn't. And then in my right around when I was turning 20, my mother introduced me to a body of work that's called Family Constellations, and I went to a weekend workshop and was basically guided through the process. And within 6 months, I was able to completely overcome, you know, the behaviors and basically beat the eating disorders. And after that happened, I ran into an old friend, and he asked me what I was doing, and I shared the story with him because it had just happened. And he basically said, well, you know, if you found a way to heal eating disorders, you need to study this, you need to learn, you need to become a healer. And at the time, I really didn't know what to do with my life. And I was waiting tables and bartending, and went to evening school to become a naturopathic doctor and humanistic psychotherapist to really learn about alternative healing. And the connection between mind and body and spirit. So by the time that I, you know, was in my late 20s, I really thought I had learned it all. I had worked through all my stuff during my training and so forth. And then I had my daughter. And with her turning 3, memories of childhood sexual abuse started to basically come back. I mean, I knew I had them. For me, it was like the first memories, basically. And it really threw me for a hoop because, you know, like I said, I had literally thought I had worked through it all and, you know, had done my share of inner work. And luckily, I had a really good spiritual mentor, and he said to me, you know, if this is resurfacing now, might have to do something with your purpose. And I'd always known that I wanted to write a book. I just didn't know on what. And so then it all just accumulated, and that's how the book was born. I basically conceptualized it for myself, but with other people in mind. And I actually took a group of women with me through the first round of the Blossom journey, and took their feedback, and then wrote the book based on, you know, on the material that I had and their feedback. So that's how I got into this. And
yeah, it's interesting how life unfolds sometimes. I mean, it's the one thing that I found interesting is that, you know, when it comes to the childhood sexual abuse, that often, you know, like you indicated, that it kind of, there was that manifest of the eating disorder or behavior, eating. You know, quite often it seems that the behaviors don't seem to necessarily, it's hard to connect the abuse and then in the childhood, and then how they may manifest as an adult. And I think that's
a challenge. I never knew why I had the eating disorders. It never made sense. My parents divorced, and there was some other stuff in my teenage years, but all that stuff happened after I already had started being anorexic. So then when I found out in my early 30s that I was abused as a young child, then everything started to make sense. So it all came together in a way.
Yeah. So in your opinion, you know, what's the crucial first step for someone, you know, who has been sexually abused when it comes to the healing process? What's the first step in the healing process?
The first step is really to realize that you're not a victim, and that feels hard and is sometimes very challenging for people to hear or even consider, because it seems, you know, for a lot of people, it seems like that this thing happened and you and your life are damaged. Yeah, basically, there's nothing you can do. It happened, and now you're kind of tarnished, and there's no way to undo it. And while that is true, it's not true that you can't become a whole person who is happy and at peace. Right, and so the first step is really to get out of a space where you feel victimized by where you basically feel like this happened, and there's no, you know, there's.
Yeah.
It happened, and there's no way for me.
Yeah.
To change
now,
that.
Yeah. Now, with that idea of the perception of being a victim, comes along the idea of, you know, being a broken, or like you said, mentioned damaged. You know, being broken or damaged. So, I mean, and I know of several people who this has happened to, and they do have that feeling of brokenness. Can you speak to the idea of, in one sense, there is that damage or is that imprint, you know, that imprint. And then there's the idea of, it happened, but, you know, you are still, loving, worthwhile, vibrant being.
Yeah, so the way I look at, us or the way we're structured is, we're a body and a soul and a spirit. And I think a lot of people feel like that their soul and their spirit were broken by the event. And what happens, it's the connection between the body and the soul and the spirit that's the thing that gets ruptured impact. And so that rupture can be healed. So you are basically able to reconnect to your spirit and your soul through your body. Right? And I look at any kind of trauma healing through very different lens than most therapists or people in that field, because it's often looked at as just psychological or, kind of mental health kind of issue, and it's actually much more a physical impact than just the psychological.
Yeah. So what you're saying here is that the damage comes from the connection, the mind-body-soul connection. I mean, the connections are what are damaged and need the healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that, when you put it in that perspective, it really kind of keeps the integrity of the idea of the mind, body, and spirit being, whole in and of themselves, but that connection the connection, between is what needs repair. So, I mean, it's one of those things where it's kind of like, it's more of a connection issue than it is, an individual, a person, the person themselves.
Yeah, or, just their psyche, basically.
Yeah.
And then to take it even a step further, I give people the picture of the body being literally like a house. And when trauma happens, it's as if lightning strikes a house. And so too much energy, too much negative energy in that case, enters the house, the body. And when the lightning strikes a house, everything in all the electrical wiring, and so forth, the circuits, they just melt and literally are damaged afterwards, right? So the circuits in which the energy flows through the house are not mostly not usable after that impact. And it's very similar. That's very similar. What happens to our body is very similar to that scenario. So there's, our nervous system. Mm-hmm, go ahead.
I was just going to say that that's a perfect image to explain the process.
Yeah, and so I think the reason why people are so afraid of sex, going and into the past and even thinking about sexual trauma healing is because they think that they have to actually face the memories and the emotions and the story and all the feelings that came with it. And that's not necessarily true, because if you just go to the physical and work with the energy, the story is not necessary. It's really much more about how well energy can flow in your body, how well your nervous system is working, and then learning ways to help your nervous system to release that or to mend itself, basically, from the energy impact.
Yeah, and kind of in keeping with your that visual, it's kind of like you don't have to actually experience the lightning, but you really kind of want to focus on the rewiring of the house.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. I will adopt that. Thank you.
Great. Well, so what do you feel are maybe some of the blocks that people may have, you know, to healing, other than, you know, the idea of maybe not really wanting to face or re-experience it, but what do you feel is one of the main blocks to healing?
I think, you know, that is one of the biggest blocks, because people don't, they don't know, right? They think that's what the healing is, that's what is required to heal. And so people are just not educated. They don't know that it's really much more of an energetic healing journey than one where they have to go through the fire, basically, again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And and it's scary, you know, to think that you have to relive it again. And people, you know, obviously, it's obvious why people wouldn't want that. It's very understandable.
Yeah. So now, for people though who, like you indicated that when your daughter was three, that's when the first kind of, you know, images or memories happened. That kind of triggered. So for people who are, actually reliving or experiencing it, maybe as a result of a trigger.
Mm-hmm.
What's the first step in trying to cope with that?
Mm-hmm. It's a really good question. So for me, or what I advise people to do is to always bring it back to the body and to start learning to feel or to sense. So it's not about feeling the feeling, it's more about really sensing the sensations that are created in your body, because the sensations have to do with the energy and
mm-hmm.
stuck energy and energy not flowing. And so the idea is that, or the way to mend your nervous system, your wiring basically, is by putting your attention on the places where it's ruptured. And you do that by sensing the sensation that's created through the fear or through the images or through their memories. For example, if somebody was to be having memories. Yeah.
So what you're saying is, in a way, it's just kind of bringing an awareness to your body's reaction to that experience.
Mm-hmm. So to give your listeners and you like a practical example, when you're angry, instead of feeling the anger, to go to the physical sensation. So for me, when I'm really angry, I have it's like a brick in my stomach kind of
mm-hmm.
feeling,
mm-hmm.
you know, for mm-hmm. example. And it could be different for everybody. You know, it could be that your neck is burning or, you know, your feet are tingling or whatnot. And it doesn't have to be the same every time, but to go to that level of sensation and physical experience, basically. What am I experiencing physically, and then feeling it or sensing it?
Yeah. Now, one part in your book, you talk about response ability, you know, and in that, I believe what you're talking about is our ability to respond, you know, to
mm-hmm.
Certain situations. And so would part of the healing process then be to rewire a response to those particular images or experiences?
It goes a little further. So when trauma happens, what happens to our brain chemistry is that our brain gets put into a state of basically be more careful, high alert, and we have three levels to the brain. There's a kind of bottom level, which is our instinctual brain, the oldest brain, the reptilian brain. When you put your hand on your neck, on the base of your neck, that's where that sits, and that's really responsible for the autonomic responses, the things that we, you know, don't consciously do, like breathing and digesting and so forth. And it's also responsible for keeping us safe and alive. And when somebody has experienced trauma, that brain kind of gets put in charge because it seems, you know, a necessity. But what that does is it basically makes us live in a state of survival, because this brain is really just concerned with survival. So it's not helping us to be creative and have good solutions, or be resourceful and kind of like develop our higher purpose and higher, you know, higher path in life. Mm-hmm. And so when that's what we have to actually work with when we want to learn to be able to respond differently. It's almost like we need to help our brain to flip the switch again, so that this reptilian brain can relax. Because when it's relaxed, then we have access to our higher faculties, and the higher faculties really make us human, and you know, that's where our genius is, our uniqueness, our creativity, as I said. And so it's not so much about rewiring a certain pattern, it's really more about helping our brain to, knowing how we can help our brain to calm, so that that switch can be flipped, basically.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
One of the things that is often kind of discussed when it comes to, you know, sexual abuse, even childhood sexual abuse, is quote, you know, someone being susceptible to that, either woman or man, susceptible. So what, is there anything that kind of can be looked at as maybe creating or communicating in a way susceptibility?
Yeah, I think in general women are more susceptible because, you know, for many, many thousands of years we've been the weaker gender, and we had to do things to survive. We had to say yes to things that we really didn't want to do just to basically be cared for or have a roof over our head and so forth. So it is very much ingrained in most of, you know, the women I talk to, and I know in my own DNA, to override our own instincts and to just say yes when we feel like there's, you know, there's a dangerous situation, or even, you know, out of habit because we don't want to hurt other people's feelings. And so I think that, you know, that's the reason why women are more susceptible, because we have that really old program running where it basically
mm-hmm.
says, you know, yeah,
yeah,
you got to do this.
Yeah.
And so I think often, you know, oftentimes, and I think that's also why the numbers are so high, because oftentimes I think that, you know, we think that sexual abuse means rape and violence and so forth, and I actually think that more often it means that maybe, you know, two people started something and then it started getting strange, and then the woman, you know, I'm speaking from experience here, just
right,
not
right.
saying anything, right, out of this kind of patterning, and then it going into a direction where it wasn't consensual anymore. And I mean, I have my own theories that because the numbers are so high, right? Who are all these guys? I don't think they're all evil villains, right? That they're
mm-hmm.
walking around raping. I actually think that oftentimes maybe a man didn't even know that, you know, the woman didn't even want to be intimate, and because she didn't say anything. And that's not to blame. It's just to look at, you know, how we do things and how this could all happen.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I agree with you in the sense that it, you know, it, sometimes, you know, the communication, you know, between a man and a woman when it comes to intimacy or even, you know, sexual interactions, that, you know, when there is a breakdown in communication, either the woman not, you know, saying exactly how she's feeling, or a man not listening or not hearing,
mm-hmm.
you know, to what a woman's saying, you know, can lead, you know, to a perception of abuse or actual abuse. I mean, you know, it's one of those cases where if you feel abused, then, you know, than in a way you are. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's,
yeah.
You know, because sometimes it's, you know, people try to, you know, gloss over, you know, abuse. Well, then this didn't happen or this didn't happen, and
mm-hmm.
how can you say it's abuse? You know, and it's like it's abuse when the person who is feeling abused feels it. So that's the reality.
Yeah, it's very subjective. Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, also, you know, in general, we all have stuff around sexuality. I mean, I don't think I know anybody who was just, you know, had nothing, like no uncomfortableness, no shame, no guilt around it. And so oftentimes there is alcohol or other things involved just because it makes it easier for us, you know, to get together. And then unfortunately
mm-hmm.
boundaries become very blurry very quickly, right? And that's not to say there's, you know, that there's people that are really sick and you know, purposefully abuse children and other people,
right?
And I think a lot of people think, you know, that kind of sexual abuse actually has much more to do with power than, you know,
mm-hmm.
actual sexuality,
exactly.
Because I think also people think there's this myth that men just can't control, you know, their sexual urges and so forth. I don't think that that's actually, you know, true, other
mm-hmm.
than, you know, in a situation where somebody's intoxicated and then goes too far and can't stop, you know, him or herself. But other than that, in my experience, it's really is most of the time when somebody abuses somebody sexually, it's because they themselves feel very powerless and have been abused in the most cases. And then it's the only way for them to feel some resemblance of power again. So it's has much more to do with personal power than actual sexuality.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you brought up a point there too, is that, you know, if they experienced that in their childhood, then in a way it's kind of like a learning pattern, you know, is a way to behave in certain circumstances. And you know, and so, I mean, it's one of those cases where it seems that, you know, the, you know, sexual abuse can be generational, you know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, passed on
yeah.
as a form of learning.
Yeah, it is in most cases.
Mm. Yeah, that's crazy. Well, we're about halfway through the show, so I want to take a quick break, and I do want to invite listeners that if you would like to call in and ask any questions, you can dial in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to post them there, and we'll get to them right after the break. And then when we come back, Carolyn, from the break, I want to talk just a little bit, kind of a high-level view of what the seven steps of the Blossom journey are, okay?
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
Hello. This is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And just a note, as of this week, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show is also available on tunein.com, and that is available on various mobile apps like iOS, Android, BlackBerry, and that kind of thing. And it's also available on connected devices like Sonos, Bose, Amazon Echo, and Google Home. So there are a lot more places that you can find the show. So again, today my very special guest is Carolyn Hauser Carson, and we're talking about her book, Blossom, Your Seven-Step Journey to Healing Childhood Sexual Abuse and Creating Your Dream Life. Again, you can find out more about what Carolyn has to offer by visiting their website, which is womeninTheFlow.com. And that's womeninTheFlow.com. And again, I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. Okay, we're back, Carolyn?
Yes.
Great. And before we do the talk about the seven steps, I did notice that you have an online group that people can participate in.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's Women in the Flow.
Can you share that? Yeah, because I just want people to know what's available.
Yeah. So you can either go to my website, Women in the Flow, and on the top right navigation, there's a link to a Facebook group that's also called Women in the Flow, and men are also welcome, although, you know, mostly women are attracted to what I'm doing, but men are also welcome.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the Facebook group, I do daily meditations during the week, Monday through Friday, and answer questions and post inspirational stuff and, you know, do all kinds of things to help people really learn about where you have your own power is in your own energy management. So my focus is all on helping and giving people tools so that they can shift their own energy and basically become of a better vibrational energy so that they can attract and have the things that they want in life with much more ease.
Great. Good. Okay, thank
yeah.
you. I just wanted to make sure that people knew that that was out there so they could
yeah,
join.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, so the seven steps of the Blossom Journey, can we kind of highlight what those are?
Yeah. The first step is called Bring Your Mind on Board, and it really has to do with letting your subconscious know what's going to happen, because if we try to change and we don't include the subconscious, it will start behaving like a two-year-old and throwing tantrums, and then it gets really hard for us to make any kind of changes because we'll just encounter a ton of resistance. And so it's really important to do that. And then the second step is called land within yourself. And as I was mentioning before, a lot of this work has to do with using your body as an instrument, as a feeling instrument, to transmute negative energy into positive. And one of the requirements is to actually know what it means to be in your body. And so the second step really helps you to start getting an idea of what that means and what that feels like. Because
mm-hmm.
oftentimes when trauma has happened, you know, people disconnect from their bodies, and it's easier, you know, to kind of live outside of your body or just in your head than actually be
right.
present and here. And then the third step is called opening to intuition. Your intuition is the voice of your higher self, and you can connect to it, to your body, to your heart, and it's also the voice that will always keep you safe, and it always knows what your next best step is. And so it's just a crucial tool to have in your life if you're wanting to navigate yourself to a better feeling life. And then the fourth step is called seeing with the eyes of truth. That's the most challenging step for most people, because that has to do with stepping out of victimhood and maybe considering looking through what happened through a different lens. So for me, that meant to actually see that what happened didn't damage me, it actually helped me and contributed to who I am today and to living my purpose. And so so it's a little different for everybody in that step. I help people to see, you know, what could be true in their life and how could what happened be a gift, basically. Because my assumption is that we all come here to learn and grow, and if this happened, you know, why did this need to happen
right.
in your life, you know, basically, what, you know, to make sense of it. And then the fifth step is called Stretch Beyond Your Limits. That is actually where I'm teaching people the how to of the energy integration, the emotional integration, the negative energy transmutation, basically. And then the sixth step is called Own All of Who You Are. Because from being involved with family constellations for so long now, I've learned that it's really important to integrate the feminine energy and feminine lineage within ourselves and the masculine. So we all come from these both energy streams. And as long as we're not at peace with both, you know, whether it's literally with our parents and the ancestors or just our own feminine masculine, it is very hard to be at peace, basically, because we're always rejecting part of ourselves. And so the sixth step really starts to go into working with the feminine and masculine within ourselves. And then the seventh step is taking it into our relationships. It's called Meet the World and Your Beloved in Wholeness. So that, you know, it's not just about you and your energy and shifting your energy, but also then how do you take this into your relationships? Because ultimately the goal is, you know, that you can have a different life, that you feel good about yourself, that you can start having good relationships, that you can start having fulfilling intimacy and abundance and health also. It's all connected, right? When you've had abuse, there's many statistics and studies done that for people that have gone through abuse, it's much harder to just allow yourself to have your basic needs met and be successful in life.
Yeah. Okay. Those steps. Now, those steps are broken down in your book by week. Is that correct? I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so, basically structured, so it's a 7-week journey. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So basically, people can start. You know, and you have it broken also about down by days. So it's in a way, is mm-hmm. it just kind of giving you a daily something, you know, daily to think about, work on,
mm-hmm.
and then at the end of the week you have a little review of what people hopefully learned and experienced mm-hmm. during that week, right?
Yeah, and then the book comes with links. So I do have recordings and audios for some things and supplemental. It is literally like a home study course where, you know, you can have me holding your hands for part of it to the recordings, and there's a transformation guide that comes with it. And it's literally like it is conceptual like a course. The reason why I did that is because the books that have helped me change my, and I've had several books that actually really changed my life, they've all been structured in that way, so I figured.
If it worked once.
Why not use that structure?
Don't reinvent the wheel. Well, you know, I actually think, you know, as I kind of mentioned in the very beginning, your book is it's a very practical, a practical book, you know, that people can really use to improve their life. And for me, practicality is key. You know, it's kind of like you can learn something or become aware of something, but unless you know exactly what to do with that knowledge or awareness, then you're kind of left hanging. So it's really important, I think, to integrate what's learned into your daily being.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of this was really about learning new practices and new ways of being, because, as you said, just cognitively knowing all of this will not make it, you know, will not make a change at all in your vibrational level, basically. It's really about you applying and working with your body and helping yourself feel better.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know, the one step number four, you know, seeing with eyes of truth, you know, when you mentioned kind of finding the gift in a way in you know what had happened, and the one thing that I've noticed with, you know, so many people who have had challenges, either be it, you know, childhood sexual abuse or maybe a diagnosis of a disease, you know, a life ending disease, it seems that there is through that drama or trauma, that there is something to be gained. You know, it's kind of like one might wonder, you know, if I chose this, or if I came to this life to learn this, why in the world would I do that? You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it seems that it's to experience it, transform or transmute it, and then go on to helping others do the same.
Yeah. So for me, you know, I wanted to learn about personal power. Right, so I basically had to go through many different ways and see how I disempowered myself, because even though I was very little, you know, I was 3 when my abuse started happening, I could have gone to my parents and said something, right? But I didn't, for whatever
mm-hmm.
reason. So for me, the lesson was all about seeing how I give away my power and seeing that I do that and nobody's forcing me to do that, and then learning how to not do that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, one of the topics in your book is to stop asking the question why. You know, and that seems to be whenever you talk to someone who maybe isn't working on understanding the experience, you know, that is the number one, first, ultimate, top of the head question: why. So.
Mm-hmm.
When you say stop asking the question why, can you kind of give us some perspective on that?
Yeah, the asking the, you know, I mean, there's why questions obviously that can empower you, but in general, if we ask, you know, why me or why did it happen and all these kinds of questions, they're not empowering ourselves. They're really just making us go in circles. And so there's other questions that we can ask ourselves, like, you know, what for? Or, you know, in the book I have several other questions that can really help you get into a place of power. Because, like I said, just asking, you know, why me, why me, why me, keeps you in a disempowered victim place, right?
Yeah, I see. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. You know, and quite often you're really not likely to get an answer or a good answer to that question.
No.
So, I mean, it's, you know, so, yeah, you're right. It's much better to focus on something where you can get answers from. Now, you mentioned a couple times the family constellations,
mm-hmm.
and you're a family constellations facilitator. I have no idea what that is. Would you mind sharing with the listeners and me as to what it is and how does that fit into the healing process?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll just share kind of my first experience with it, because, to be honest, it's mm-hmm. very hard to describe, because even though I've been facilitating constellations for 20 years, it's still, I know that they work, and I know they're super powerful, and still every time a miracle. The scientific explanation that I've come to is what it does is basically it takes unhealthy images that we have in our subconscious and replaces them with healthy images. And because our subconscious is so powerful, and we mostly create our lives based on the images that we hold in our subconscious, when we have a healthy image in our subconscious, our entire life changes, and it feels like it just changes automatically. But it's because our subconscious always wants to match the image that it is holding. Right? So if we have something mm-hmm. healthy in our subconscious, then it wants to match that healthy image, and so then it creates a good life for us. If we have dysfunction and dysfunctional images in our subconscious, it will recreate that because that feels safe. That's what's known. So constellations basically very quickly can change your life for that reason. And the way it is done is when I had my first constellation, I literally went to a workshop where I didn't know anybody. There were about 20 other people, and they all had their issues, you know, from going through cancer to going through divorce. And then I was there with my eating disorder. And so when it was my facilitator basically just asked to pick people from the circle and ask them if they would represent for my immediate family. So I asked somebody to be my mother, somebody to be my father, my siblings, and then someone to represent the eating disorder. And then I was asked to place the people in the room. And so that is why this modality is called constellating, because you literally putting elements or representatives in that case,
mm-hmm.
people, in a spatial order in the room based on your inner picture, kind of. You do it very intuitively, but, you know, people are basically then placed in a dynamic, and then the facilitator just interviews and asks these people questions, and the phenomena that can be observed is that all of a sudden these people that know nothing about you have access to information that, you know, it's just mind-boggling. So it basically proves that there is a field that has all knowledge and that's, you know, has stored all knowledge that we can always have access to. And because these representatives are not invested in your story, right, they don't have any emotional hurts, they're not, you know, they don't have any ego trip with anything, they can very purely just report how a person feels or how they feel in relationships to somebody else. And so the deep underlying issues can be revealed very, very quickly. And usually when a facilitator facilitates, we always look from, and it always starts usually very disjointed, people not looking at each other and love and energy not flowing, basically. And then the facilitator just looks for what words have to be said, what movements have to be made, so that the people or the parts, you know, you can also do this with, for example, you could constellate just your physical body and the different organs. But anything that is in relationship to each other, you could constellate. And so the facilitator always looks to facilitate a movement towards more flow, towards more openness, towards a resolution. And ideally, it ends up where, you know, people end up hugging or communicating with each other, and there's a sense of relief and connection between the different pieces. And it generally just takes about 45 minutes to facilitate one of these pieces, basically. And clients or, you know, whoever gets the constellation, just watch it. And then in the end, you might step into your own place and experience the resolution, basically. But it's not necessary for... I've done constellations where people didn't even see it, where they just knew that it happened. And it's almost like you're working in the matrix and you're adjusting the soul of the system. And then once that's done, everything ripples out and on the earth, in our reality, it falls into the right place. So it's very powerful.
That's fascinating. The facilitator... So the individual who, you know, kind of selects and places the elements, you know, spatially. So is there then just does that person then basically say, you know, this is, like, this is what I want to work with, or this is a challenge. I mean, and the facilitator does all of the talking to the various elements?
Yes. It nowadays you can do that, but originally it was done in groups, so you would basically, if I was the client or if you came to work, you would be in a group and you would say what your issue is, and then the facilitator, based on what your issue is and based on experience, would say, okay, pick someone for your ex-wife, pick someone for your mother, pick someone, you know, so, and then you basically would just follow the instructions and place these people in the room, and then you would just sit down, and then the facilitator works with the people that have been selected. They will speak and give information, so it's a very collaborative thing, because all of a sudden you, as the person there, will start to remember things. You will think, you know, you will have things to contribute. Oftentimes, you know, we know stories. We know, oh, yeah, my grandmother lost her little brother, you know, in the war. We know these stories, but we don't think it had an impact, you know. And then in the constellation, sometimes it will be revealed how much of an impact it actually had and how much energy is still stuck in the system because it was, you know, it was never talked about. Or just kind of brushed on the carpet, things like that. And, there's science now, epigenetics, that has proven that we inherit trauma and, you know, things. I mean, it's in our body. It's in our DNA.
And yeah, I know. I often think back, boy, did I get a lot of, you know, just in the couple of generations I know. So, you know, let alone...
Yeah.
So, you know, going back a few more generations.
Work with seven generations back.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Quite a cleanup like sometimes.
It is. And you know, but the thing with that, too, is that, you know, if you have an awareness of that being the fact, and you go ahead and you work on, and, you know, in clearing or healing certain issues, you also become very aware to not creating, adding to the load for the generations
mm-hmm.
to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you also realize that, you know, everybody has a story. The things that, you know, people have gone through and lived through that, you know, have come through my workshops and so forth, it's incredible. And anybody that I've talked to and that has been able to really openly share, we all are in this together. So nobody that's mm-hmm. kind of had it easier.
Yeah, well, when you talk about the matrix, you know, and the, you know, actually being all that interconnectedness, I mean,
yeah.
When you think about it, you know, the trauma or drama or the brokenness, you know, it was not just one person. I mean, it's not just you individually. It was you with someone else. So when when you think back, I mean, you really the scope of the web can be quite wide.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, and so the beautiful thing is, you know, we have the luxury to actually, you know, be spending time on healing. It's, you know, we're not only concerned with our survival anymore, right? So our generation and the generations to come, we actually can do this work, and we have the space and the resources and all of that knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. So what is one of the most, I mean, obviously family constellation, but is that the most effective modality that you use when it comes to healing sexual trauma, or are
mm-hmm.
there other modalities that you employ?
No, that's the most effective one. And then also
yeah.
I do teach people energetic tools that they can use on their own, because it is very much, you know, everybody just is in their own body and their own nervous system. So there's things that I can do for other people, and then there's things that they really have to do on their own because they are in their body, and I can only teach them, and then they have to, you know, they have to go to the muscle booth and strengthen the muscle, basically, do the workout.
Yeah, exactly. So now, in some of these cases, you know, we talked about people who have memories of the abuse. So
mm-hmm.
For those who don't, you know, maybe some people who are experiencing some of the similar types of behaviors or life circumstances that
mm-hmm.
Might, you know, kind of harken back to that period,
mm-hmm.
is it necessary that those memories be resurface in order to...
No.
Okay.
No, because it's really more about, you know, if you are having symptoms, right, if you're afraid of men, or if you're having a hard time having a good relationship, that's, you know, that is a symptom, obviously. Obviously something happened. It's not necessarily what the important thing is that we know there's something, and then we can work with that something and transform it.
Yeah. So going back to that lightning in the house, you know, I mean,
yeah.
that lightning may have occurred before, but you're in the house now,
exactly.
So you just know it needs to be fixed.
Exactly. Yeah.
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 Okay. So what is like one of the most important things that you want our listeners to kind of take away from today's chat?
The most important thing that I want people to take away is that we don't have power over other people, you know, what they do to us, how they behave. We don't have power over our circumstances for the most part, but we do have power over our own energy and our level, our vibrational levels. And so to really make the focus learning about things and tools that will help you shift your vibration and I have several tools on my website for free that people can download that will help them. You know, but to really just know that your power lies with you being able to shift your own energy. And when you do that, your life can transform completely. Mine has, and that of my clients does. And it doesn't have to take very long, and it's not scary.
Yeah. Well, that's important. Yeah. You know, it's the empowerment, the awareness of one's own power is really something that is, I think, in today's environment, kind
mm-hmm.
of greatly overlooked. And
yes.
And just one more thing before we go, the hashtag MeToo movement or the other movements, regarding women empowerment now, do you feel that this is going to be a force to help not only women but also young girls to be able to confront, this, disempowering kinds of situations that they experience?
I think it's a good first step. The danger is that we get stuck in staying angry or pointing fingers, right? And that's not healing. So I think it's a good first step. It's a sign that people are starting to move out of shame and guilt, which are very low vibrational frequencies. People are overcoming that and talking about it. Anger is a higher vibration than shame and guilt, so it's better, but it's still not life-giving and it's still not sustaining, right? So it's a catalyst, but then we have to really go to courage and acceptance and ultimately, obviously, hopefully get to a place where we can be loving so that we ourselves can have the best experience possible.
Yeah. So, this might be kind of off the wall, but do you feel would be the next step hashtag that would kind of
what,
get
what
to
next?
That?
What now? Hashtag we do. Hashtag what now?
Okay. All right. Well, Carolyn, it has really been a pleasure to speak with you today. I really appreciate you taking the time to share your insight and story with us. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Again, my pleasure, too. So, everyone, again, today my very special guest has been Carolyn Hauser Carson. We've been talking about her book, Blossom, Your Seven-Step Journey to Healing Childhood Sexual Abuse and Creating Your Dream Life. Again, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is womeninTheFlow.com. That's W-O-M-E-N. intheflow.com, and definitely check that out for those free tools that she has available on her website and start your journey today. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show, and until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Bite Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.